You have all heard of the ancient city of Pompeii, destroyed by an earthquake many hundreds of years ago. Many excavations have been done, unearthed the story of the destruction. There was one particular discovery that was made that is a phenomenal story. It seems that at the city gate, Pompeii, there was a sentinel, a guard, a soldier. It was his job to stand guard at that gate no matter what. When they unearthed that section of the city, which was destroyed by the volcano, and the ash that fell covered everything, they found that sentinel still at his post, still with his spear grasped in hand. He stood at his post when everyone else was running and screaming and seeking safety. Some tried to run away. They didn't make it. Some tried to go inside and they didn't make it, but he stood his ground. He stood his post until he died. He was found there. That is a tremendous portrait of devotion to duty. But I suggest to you that it is also a monument to futility. As Christians, we do need such devotion. But I suggest to you tonight that oftentimes our devotion is misplaced. And we're standing guard in just as futile a way as did that man so many years ago. Oh, we guard many things. We guard our checkbooks, our bank balances, and guarantee them with charge cards and everything else so we won't bounce a check. We guard our finances. We guard our cars. I was at a mall recently, and I came out with some packages to put them in the car for Diane, and there's some van there with some signal going off. Man, he was blasting all over the parking lot. Some security vehicle that's dead in there trying to figure out how in the world to turn it off. We guard our cars. We guard our checkbooks. We guard our homes. You can buy all kinds of expensive security systems for your home. You can probably find some people has those right here in Spencer, no doubt. Or we have a dog or something else. We're concerned about our possessions. We even guard our jobs. I've seen the people displaying the bumper stickers that urge you to buy American and so forth. What that's aimed at is saving American jobs. We guard a lot of things, but my friends, all these things are just as vulnerable as Pompeii. We need to realize that life is more than these things. Instead, we ought to be guarding our hearts. That which is truly significant. When we look at Proverbs chapter 4, the last five verses of this chapter, we'll find that that is the emphasis that we have here, the guarding of the heart. And as we go into this new year, and as we witness all the interviews that you see on TV and in the newspaper, you know, what's your New Year's resolution, so on, I suppose that whether you're the type that makes New Year's resolutions or not, you cannot help but at least for moments during this time of year, reflect upon your life and think about the year to come. We often say to one another, especially on the first day of the new year, Happy New Year, without so much as a thought as to what goes into making this coming year a happy one. What will make it a happy one? I suggest to you that all these material things, whether we have them in abundance or not, will not secure our happiness. If we want to truly be happy, then we must be a spiritual success. We must be concerned with our souls or our hearts, as we're told here by Solomon. We need to guard our hearts. We need to be concerned about our actions, our lives as far as being a Christian is concerned. We need to be more concerned about that than anything else. And it is truly the time, I think, for us to reflect upon our stance before the Lord. And as we look at Proverbs 4, verses 23 to 27, he begins by saying, keep your heart in verse 23. Keep your heart. Now, he's not talking about the physical organ that pumps blood, obviously. He's speaking about the soul of man, the immaterial part, the part you can't see. It's called the mind in some places, the heart in other places, the soul in other places, the spirit in other places in the Bible. It's the immaterial part of man that you cannot see. That which controls physical man, that which is more than anything else what we really are. Keep your heart. Guard it. That's what the word keep means. Watch over it. Take care of it. But now, how do we do that? I think we need to point out as well that if we guard our heart, we are guarding it primarily from evil. We're guarding ourselves from being tempted into sin. But how do we go about guarding our heart so that we do not end up being a failure for the Lord in the days ahead? Well, there are three means by which we can guard our hearts here in verses 23 to 27. Three means. First of all, suppression. Secondly, separation. And finally, preparation. Let's look at the first one. First means by which we can guard our heart is suppression. Suppression. Verse 23. Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. To suppress means to keep in or hold back that which will come out if we do not. You see, we all tend to express the evil that is within. We're all sinners. We've all sinned and come short of the glory of God, and therefore we are all sinners at heart. We do not have to have any outward temptation, really, to sin, because much of our sin is a result of that which is just coming out of us. Because sin is a part of our very being. And we tend to express the evil that resides within our hearts. Therefore, we must learn to suppress it. Suppress this inclination to do that which is wrong. Guard your heart with all diligence. And that phrase means above anything else. It's more important than guarding anything else. Guard your heart with all diligence. For out of it are the issues of life. Now, the Hebrew word translated issues is an interesting word. It means something that has gone forth. It was used back in their day of the surveyor's line. And they would establish a certain point, and then they would sight off and lay a straight linear line, a straight line in one direction or the other. And that line, as it went out from that point, was known by this word translated issues. It's that which comes from a certain point, or in this case, that which comes from our hearts and is expressed. And it refers to our tendency to express the evil within. But we're told to put away, in verse 24, put away from thee a crooked mouth and perverse lips put far from thee. And primarily the way in which we express the evil within is with our mouth. Now, he could have mentioned other things, which we, other body parts, such as our hands or whatever, that we might use when we sin. But I think the most readily available tool is our mouth. And that is the most likely way that we will express the evil that resides within us. So he says, put away from thee a crooked mouth and perverse lips put far from thee. The word crooked in the Hebrew means deformed or disfigured. It's sort of like someone who talks out of the side of their mouth. We might use that terminology. It was a way of saying, don't lie. Don't talk with a crooked mouth. The Indians called it a forked tongue. I suppose the Hebrews called it a crooked mouth. And the word perverse in that same verse, referring to perverse lips, that word means crooked as well, although it's a different word. It's a synonym. Do not speak and express the evil that is within. And most usually, that is done by expressing something that is not true, or in other cases, I suppose, expressing anger or whatever. Maybe in some cases it would involve swearing or whatever. But man tends to use his mouth for his own good, no matter what expression of evil it might engender. There is a book that has been published just recently. I've not got a chance to read it. My wife read it, thinks it's good, and I've heard some of his takes. But the author is Harold Morris. Harold Morris spent several years in penitentiary and many months on death row. He was given two double life sentences. And I don't know how, it was some kind of fluke or mistake that he ended up on death row. He wasn't supposed to be executed, but anyway, he was saved in prison. In fact, he wasn't guilty of the murder. He was set up by some friends, and he took the rap for them. They actually pulled the trigger. He had nothing to do with it. But he was convicted. They turned state's evidence on him. He was convicted. He spent many years in prison. He was saved there. He's now written a book to parents and a teenager. And I would suggest that if you have teenagers, you ought to get this book, read it, and pass it along to them. Because he has a lot of good things to say about how to avoid the troubles that you can get into. And how just the little things are what leads to the worst things. But anyway, while he was in prison in Atlanta, Georgia, Burt Reynolds made a movie entitled The Longest Yard. And I think it was about a football game in a prison or something. I never saw the movie, but this movie was filmed at the prison where Harold Morris was a prisoner. And in this book, on page 99 and 100, he tells about this movie. He actually got to appear in the movie with Burt Reynolds, I suppose as an extra or something there in the movie. And he was called to the warden's office one day, and there was a lot of reporters there. And this one reporter looked at him and said, "Mr. Morris, I guess being in a movie with Burt Reynolds is the greatest thrill of your life, isn't it?" Well, this was shortly after Morris was saved, and he looked at the reporter and said, "Ma'am, on February 19th of this year, I gave my heart to Jesus. That's the greatest thrill of my life." To Morris's utter astonishment, the next day he picked up the paper and read, "Harold Morris, a baby-faced gent, 5 down on a double life sentence, said that being in a movie with Burt Reynolds was the greatest thrill of his life." Now that's a crooked mouth. More than a crooked mouth. That's crooked in print even. But that's a good example. The reporter wanted that story so bad, it made a difference what he heard, or what she heard in this case. But that's what was going to go. And that is the inclination of man. To twist things around to suit us, to twist the truth, to express the evil within, whatever. But we need to learn to suppress that, to hold it back. The second means by which we guard our hearts is separation. Not only suppression of that which tends to come out, but separation from the things that are without that become a temptation to us. This we find in verse 25. "Let thine eyes look right on." And that's not a hippie expression in this case. Look straight ahead at me. "Let thine eyes look right on. And let thine eyelids look straight before thee." I'm not real sure how eyelids see anything, but evidently that was another way of speaking of the whole eye in the Hebrew way of doing things, and it's just a double emphasis, a parallelism here. He says, now, keep your eyes focused straight ahead. I don't want you looking over here. I don't want you looking over here. And the idea is that the right path lies in front. You don't want to stray from the path. But the focus of the whole verse is that we are tempted to do that which is wrong when we observe things in our environment that are a temptation unto us. Jesus said in Matthew 6:22, "If your eye offends, pluck it out." You know, and of course that was a hyperbole, an exaggerated way of speaking to help make the point that, listen, your eyes are going to be a great stumbling block, and you've got to be careful of what you look at and what you observe. And we have got to be careful in it, because we live in an environment that is absolutely polluted with all sorts of temptation. The eye has always been a pathway to sin. Eve beheld the fruit, and it was pleasing in her sight. It looked good. It looked like it would be good to eat. That was an avenue of temptation. Satan took Jesus up on the mountain. He said, look, I'll show you all the kingdoms of the world. These will be yours if you'll fall down and worship me. The eye has always been an avenue to temptation. But we are to keep our eyes fixed on the right. Kind of reminds me of the blinders they used to put on the plow horses or on the old mules. Haven't seen any of these for years. So I don't know. They're sort of the little cuffs that they have hooked on their harness. They can't see this way or that way. I always was fascinated with them. I always thought, I wonder what that mule would do if he could see over there. You know, I suppose they'd decide to whether go the other way or something. But we need a set of spiritual blinders as Christians. We need to learn to block out the things that exist in our environment. Sometimes we can't help seeing them, but we don't have to allow our eyes to dwell on them to the point that our hearts feed on those sort of things. All sorts of literature, all sorts of things on the TV set and the movies and on and on and on. And what is a temptation to one person in one situation may not be to another. You've got to determine where your problem areas are. So separation is important. Suppress what will come out as an expression of the evil that is in, and separate yourselves from the things in your environment that will be a temptation to you. Now, up to this point, I've told you what to do, but I haven't given you much instruction on how to do it. I mean, it's one thing to say, you know, don't look at this and don't dwell on this. And it's one thing to say, now suppress this idea or thought or this emotion. But how? And that's why the third point in the message tonight is the key. In fact, it is the key to the other two. Preparation. If we prepare ourselves ahead of time, it is quite likely that our plans, our preparation for the way we want to live, will enable us to suppress the evil thoughts and to block out the temptation. It is the key to the whole thing. We find it in verse 26. Ponder the path of thy feet, and let all thy ways be established. Now, the Hebrew word ponder comes from a parent noun which means balance or a scales, the old balance scales. But this word, ponder here, in the verb form, means to make an equal measurement. It also means to smooth out a path and make it smooth. In other words, when you open a road or they didn't have bulldozers back in that day, but when you doze out a new road up the side of a hill or whatever, you want to make a nice smooth road, so you rid it of all the obstacles. That's the way this word was used, of making roads, of making even balances in that day and age. And it refers to having something that is not unlevel, but having something nice and level and smooth. Okay, the path of your feet should be a nice, smooth, level path to walk on. Now, the only way you're ever going to choose the right type of path to walk on is to ponder the path that your feet is going to take. That means beforehand to consider what you're going to do. Think about where you're going. It's kind of like walking through the woods. Many of you fellows did some walking through the woods just recently during deer season. Now, if you just walk into the woods and never look where you're going, you know you're going to get in trouble. And I do this, especially squirrel hunting sometimes, because I'm walking, looking up, not paying attention to where I'm going. You find yourself right in the middle of a big old greenbrier patch or whatever. But you got to ponder the path of your feet. As you walk through the woods, there might be trees down, the briar patches, brush, and the best thing to do is avoid these things. So you never take a straight path. You're always all over the place, getting from one point to the next. And as we walk through life, in a sense, we're walking through a wilderness. And we have got to pick the right path. It's sort of like the Merrill Lynch bull going through the China store. You've seen that commercial years ago. They got that bull in there, and he, you know, all that glass stacked up, and he goes around. He doesn't touch anything, doesn't knock anything over. That is the type of thing that we have got to do in our lives, because the world we live in is a veritable wilderness. There's many obstacles that will trip us up in our Christian life. So ahead of time, we've got to ponder the path of our feet. Now, it says, ponder the path of thy feet and let all thy ways be established. Now, the word established is a word that was used in the Old Testament to refer to God's creation. And there's actually some translations of this word in the Old Testament where it's translated prepared. God prepared such and such. And I think that's the best way to understand the word here. If we ponder the path of our feet, then the way that we're going to go is already going to be prepared, thought out. We're going to know the way to go. And if we have all thought out and planned out, and we take that path, then when the obstacles come on the outside, we won't be turned, our head won't be turned to them. We won't stray off the path, which is our tendency if it's not thought out ahead of time. Just today I picked up one of Diane's books, and the author is Maribel Morgan. She wrote The Total Woman. Some of you ladies probably remember that. She's the lady that's been on all the talk shows and famous for her saran wrap advice. If some of you ladies will know what I'm talking about. Others will wonder. You don't ask me. I'm not going to tell you. But she was been quite popular. She's wrote another book now entitled The Electric Woman. I believe it is. Yeah, The Electric Woman. And if you wonder what that is, read the book. I don't know. But I picked it up. And I was reading this one section where she is talking about sharing your love with others. And she's talking particularly in this chapter that I was reading about helping young people deal with the temptations of life today and so on. And she told about going to a junior high school and speaking to a group of girls and talking about different subjects. And she came to the subject of boys. And the thing that she said to this group of junior high school students was that it is too late to determine what your moral standards are when you're in a car alone with a boy on a moonlit night. It's too late at that point to decide what your moral standards are. In other words, you've got to have made that decision a long time before. Now, that's Maribel's advice, not mine. I might advise don't be alone on a moonlit night with a boy at that age, period. But anyway, she said, you know, it's too late at that point. And that's good advice. You've got to think things through ahead of time, because you're going to be thrust into situations where the temptation is going to be so great that it's hard to think straight and deal with it. And my friends, that doesn't just go for young people. That goes for everybody. I think that's the way it is with about anything in life. I get myself in trouble more times when I'm thrust into a situation I didn't expect. You ever had that happen? Someone asked me for advice about something I haven't thought it through, and I'll say, well, probably so-and-so. And then a day later, sometimes I call them back and say, hey, you know, the more I think about it, I think maybe that's not right. It's easy if you don't have things thought through ahead of time. Now, what am I saying? Well, I'm sort of saying what Louis Pasteur said many years ago. He said, chance favors only the mind which is prepared. If we as Christians live our life by chance all the time, just not really thinking much about life, you know, and we just kind of meander along, we never ponder the paths of our feet, we're going to get in trouble. There's no doubt about it. Ponder the path of thy feet and let all thy ways be established. Turn not to the right hand, nor to the left. Remove thy foot from evil by following the pre-planned path. Now, we as Christians, as we enter into this new year, in fact, we as Christians ought to do this daily, should we not? We ought to ponder the path every day. What's my path for today? But as we enter into this new year, which is the case right now, hopefully we'll be thinking about the year to come. And we as Christians ought to be pondering our path right now. We ought to be thinking ahead. What is it that I want to accomplish for the Lord this year? I know there's a whole lot of people in the church that in my opinion, just need to find out what ministry the Lord wants them to have. Everybody ought to have some sort of ministry, whether it be a large one or a small one, for the Lord. Think ahead. What does God want me to do? What decision should I make about the way I'm serving the Lord and living for Him? You say, well, I don't know what to do. Well, make some plans. Do what you want to do. And surely you find something in the world that you'd like to do for the Lord, then do it. You'll never know if you don't experiment. Think ahead. What areas of my life do I know for sure, judging from last year, are wanting? Where do I usually make my mistakes? Am I not faithful enough? Am I weak in this area or that? Where is it that I'm always having to confess sin? Think those things through. Make a list of the troubled areas that you have in your life that you need to correct. Make a list of the positive things that you want to do, the things you want to accomplish, spiritual things. Think through what you're going to do and then plot the right course. Now, Solomon is talking here primarily about keeping your foot, you know, removing your foot from evil. Don't stray to the right or the left. Do what's right. And that should be the main focus. But if you'll look with me at Hebrews chapter 12, there's something else I want to bring into this. In Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1, yeah, I didn't mark it. I'll find it here in a minute. Hebrews 12, 1, the Bible says, wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us. And let us run with patience the race that is set before us. In the Hebrews passage here, he's talking about the race that is set before us. Proverbs is talking about the path before us. There's a lot of the same ideas here. And in Hebrews 12, 1, he says, lay aside every weight and the sin. You see, some things in your life, it may not be a question of right or wrong, but it's a question of choosing between two things, neither one necessarily being wrong. It's a matter of priorities. Now, I have problems with things that are wrong in my life, don't get me wrong. But sometimes I think I have more problems with the things I do right. Now, think about it. You see, I have so many things that would be good things to do, and I feel I need to do them, that the first thing you know, I'm so busy trying to do everything, that I don't even accomplish the most important thing. Do you ever feel that way? I mean, there's all kinds of things in our life that just kind of filter in, clutters up our life. And it just kind of weights us down, and we're trying to juggle so many things. We wear so many hats that we find ourselves slacking off on the really important thing. If I'm not careful, I will find that other things are interfering with my time with my family, and that to me is a number one priority. That's where things start. But it's easy to become overcommitted in so many areas. And this is one thing that I'm constantly thinking in my mind and trying to assess my priorities and where my time should be spent. Because as you all know, and you well know as well as I, that we don't have enough time to do everything, as it seems. We only have time to do what we choose to do, and those things should be the most important things. Ponder the path of your feet. We as Christians ought to be doing that on a daily basis. Get in that habit. If you do not think out the life that you're living for the Lord ahead of time based on the principles of His Word, then as you meander along in this life, there's going to be times where for sure you're going to have a problem because you're not going to be separated. You're going to make wrong choices. You're not going to be suppressing the evil within. It's like the old saying goes, if you don't aim at anything, then you'll hit it. You know what I mean? If we don't have a goal, we'll never accomplish anything. I think that goes for us as individuals. I think it goes for us as a church, and that's part of what I want to talk about Wednesday night in the church vein, and we'll talk more about that in a couple weeks, because next Sunday night we'll talk about personal items again in this same general vein from Philippians chapter 4, and then the following 2 weeks we're going to talk about the church as we enter into the new year. But if we are going to guard our hearts, we've got to suppress the evil within, separate ourselves from the temptation without, and make sure we have pondered the path of our feet so that we're prepared to live as we enter into tomorrow. We as Christians need to do that to accomplish the most for the Lord. And for those that are unsaved, I think it would be good if you pondered the path of your feet. In the book of Luke chapter 12, Jesus told the parable. Luke chapter 12, verses 18 to 21, Jesus told the parable of the rich fool. Let me read it to you. And he spoke a parable unto them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, because I have no place to bestow my crops? And he said, This will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater. And there will I bestow all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then who shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. Wouldn't it be a shame to live your whole life? Never make any plans about your soul. Never make any preparations for the day when you die and you have to stand before God. What a shame that would be.